The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Martha Potter from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State Magazine. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting this podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. So in this episode, we'll go a little deeper into the theme of the November issue of Our State Magazine, which is Beauty in the Grain, featuring articles about the warmth of wood. But first, since it is getting close to Thanksgiving, I'm going to read an article entitled The True Feast of Thanksgiving. Many tables are crowded with loved ones and set with turkey and trimmings, but some North Carolinians serve something far greater: generosity, decency, and comfort. To the holiday's true feast, where what we bow our heads to give thanks for, is found by joining hands with neighbors and sharing kindness in abundance. Goodness knows. Cabarrus Meals on Wheels delivers dignity thanks to devoted staff and volunteers who get coolers in the car and food on the table. When you're doing something that helps your community, it's much more than a job. Gerald Campbell says he helps prepare the meals that volunteers deliver to local residents. At the wheel of his Ford F-150, our driver navigates Concord streets with familiar confidence. Led by both memory and mission, he follows the same route each second and fourth Wednesday of the month, eventually pulling down a wide and quiet residential road and parking along the curb. There's a chill in the air as he hops into the back seat, double checks his list, fills plastic bags with sealed meals from the cooler, and hot bags. For nearly 5 years, Franklin Plummer has volunteered for Cabarrus Meals on Wheels. Often accompanied by Annie, his 8-year-old Westie, he drives Route 15 to deliver food to a roster of 17 or so residents. In his late 70s, with an easy smile and warm eyes, Plummer tells me he first learned of the program when his best friend began volunteering. About 6 months before, Plummer's youngest daughter, Wade, qualified for Meals on Wheels due to his physical disabilities, and Plummer wanted the chance to bring meals to his son. Plummer packs 3 bags, then turns to me. "You ready?" While every delivery day is good, he says, this one is particularly special. It's the day before Thanksgiving, and we're bringing a holiday meal. This is what I was anticipating when, 4 hours earlier, I found myself in a shiny commercial kitchen trying to be useful as Andy Allen and his team hustled around me. Like any cook does on a food-focused holiday, Allen was eyeing the oven, consulting the thermometer, and watching the timer. But unlike most cooks, Allen wasn't just preparing one turkey. He was slow-roasting 24 for 400 people. Just a few feet away, fellow Cabarrus Meals on Wheels staff were at their stations, too. Gerald Campbell was heating up heaps of green beans, while Nicole Getze and Susan Kunder tended to the golden cornbread and cobbler. Soon, steaming hot sweet potatoes, more than 150 pounds of them, were pulled out of the oven. Allen and Campbell mashed the potatoes, adding butter, cinnamon, and brown sugar before topping the pans with marshmallows. The kitchen smelled like comfort, like holidays, like home. The Meals on Wheels menus are set by nutritionists, but as any kitchen manager, Allen can zhuzh it up, especially on days like today. For some people, depending on their situation, this might be the only holiday meal they get, Allen said. I take pride in providing that, and I like to make it special for them. Allen paused to check the clock. There was still work to be done before the drivers picked up the day's deliveries. It's gravy time, he called out, and the hustling began. Since 1974, Cabarrus Meals on Wheels has provided a nutritious meal 5 days a week to homebound seniors and individuals with disabilities. Executive Director Kimberly Strong has been at the nonprofit's helm for 19 of those years, growing the organization exponentially and navigating its changing needs as it moved from a small Concord restaurant to the large facility it's in today. And while Meals on Wheels operates in each North Carolina county, Cabarrus is one of just a few in our state that has its own kitchen, meaning that in addition to serving adults, it also prepares hundreds of breakfasts and lunches for school children through the Head Start program. Strong's staff arrives at 6 a.m. each weekday to cook and pack this food with care. But their reach wouldn't be possible without the 400-plus rotating volunteers, ranging in age from high school students to folks in their 80s. And including such regulars as the New Gilead Reformed Church Congregation and the Rotary Club of Cabarrus County, who've driven consistent routes for 25 and 21 years, respectively. Baby boomers were brought up with the mission of helping their fellow man, Strong explains. Our older volunteers will say, "There but for the grace of God go I," recognizing that everyone is just one crisis away from needing assistance themselves. She says it's not uncommon for clients to tell their drivers, "You've saved my life." And that, Strong adds, is why they do it. Route 15's First Street has three clients, one of whom is already waiting on her porch with her dog Sunshine when we pull up. Plummer calls out his hellos as he walks with a quick pace up to Janice Cobble's home. "Oh, Franklin, I'm so glad to see you," she replies as he reaches the porch gate and passes off the bags with a handshake and a warm smile. They exchange pleasantries for a few moments and then bid farewell to each other. "I hope you have a great holiday. Bless you," he adds as he heads back down the driveway to grab food for two other neighbors. Later on the route, we pull up at the home of Wilma Jackson, where Plummer pulls out a colorful cupcake, flower, and a bag of goodies to accompany the meals. He greets Mrs. Jackson with a jolly "Happy Birthday," and shares that she had been the organist at his former church, First Baptist in Concord. She marvels at the gesture, seeming surprised to be remembered. But none of this surprises Plummer. He knows which clients will be sitting by the door and which ones will just wave from the window. He knows who's going through a hard time, be it sadness or sickness, and who is certain to perk up from a quick visit. The familiarity of this route, the homes, the residents, their pets, and their preferences, is something that is built over time. It's earned with each delivery year after year. As we drive Route 15 for two touching hours, Plummer explains that he has lived in Concord since the late 1970s and worked as a trial attorney for 50 years. "Before I retired, I assumed I'd get back to my golf game," he says with a chuckle, "but I'm doing what I enjoy, and that's doing things for other people. It's fulfilling, yes. It's also healing." Before long, Route 15 takes us by Wade's house. While Plummer delivered meals to his son for 6 months, today he simply slows a bit, turning his head to send a gentle nod or kiss toward the home. It's been 3 years since Wade, who had severe bone degeneration, died unexpectedly at age 42. And yet Plummer never questioned whether he'd continue delivering. "It keeps him connected to his son," he says, "but also to the route, to the rest of Route 15. Concord has about 100,000 people, but in this neighborhood, the older part, people know me and people need me. Just blocks away from his own home, which he shares with his wife and more than 70 stunning rose bushes, Plummer pulls into the driveway at Mildred Watts' residence. Through church and their neighborhood, the Plummer and Watts families have known each other for nearly five decades. It doesn't usually work this way. Most of the time, Meals on Wheels routes are run by volunteers who deliver to strangers. But here at this modest brick ranch, Plummer not only delivers meals, he also leans on their shared history, one of social events and board games, but also one of children with disabilities, great loss, and recent illness. "Do you need a ride to the dentist? Remember that one time? Can I take you to the funeral on Sunday? We're praying for you." As Plummer speaks, Watson slowly nods along. She has very few words today, as recent strokes have limited her communication. My eyes drift up the wall to a framed needlepoint quote that looks like it's been hanging for ages. "Be not simply good, be good for something." When we get back into the truck, we're both quiet for a moment before Plummer turns, looks me in the eyes, and breaks the silence with what I'd been mulling over. "You can see why I get more out of this than they do." Indeed, I do. We take what it feels like the collective breath, and then once again he reaches up, starts the engine, and we complete Route 15. The next afternoon, my big, boisterous family gathers for Thanksgiving at my home in Winston-Salem. More than a dozen of us hug and catch up. We add the extra leaf to the dining room table. We fill glasses full and plates high. There's food to spare and plenty of cheer here, but as we hold hands and say grace, my thoughts are on my new friends in Cabarrus County. I think of Andy and Gerald, of Kimberly, of Susan and Nicole. I most certainly think of Mr. Plummer, and know that we're both thinking of those with a quieter holiday, of Mrs. Cobble, Mrs. Jackson, Mrs. Watts, and the rest of Route 15. It's all good, and it's all good for something. Thank goodness. To learn more about Cabarrus Meals on Wheels, check them out at cabarrusmow.org. To volunteer for Meals on Wheels in your community, visit mealsonwheelsamerica.org/volunteer. And now we'll continue on with the theme of the edit of the magazine, which is Beauty in the Grain, all about wood. And this article is entitled Good Character. In Gibsonville, a father and his daughters have transformed a former cotton mill into the hardwood store of North Carolina, a place where knowledge is as enduring as the wood itself. And on the facing page, there's stacks of wood, some with raw edges. The roughly 40 wood species inside the hardwood store of North Carolina are sourced from as far as Africa and South America by owner Hilton Peel and his daughters, Sarah Butala and Helen Hobson. And there's a picture of those folks. Walk into the store warehouse and your eye is drawn to the vibrant planks amid a sea of browns. Purple Heart, imported from Africa, is popular for its naturally occurring plum hue. Beneath the sign with leafy hardwood tree, the door to the old Mineola cotton mill in Gibsonville opens to a world of wood. The smell of oak and pine and cedar coaxes customers inside the hardwood store of North Carolina. It's a scent you might inhale in a closet of the turn-of-the-century home or a mountain cabin. If character had a smell, this would be it. A doorway on the other side of the showroom reveals a 42,000-square-foot stash of plywood planks, 40 species of domestic and exotic lumber laid in stacks, each with a grain as unique as a thumbprint. Amid the chorus from the ripsaw slicing through planks and the molder-shaping custom trim, owner Hilton Peel and his daughters, Helen Hobson and Sarah Butala, field questions from customers. Peel carries high-quality lumber, but after 36 years in the industry, his most valuable asset is his knowledge, something he's shared with his daughters. If you're building a cutting board, they'll tell you to steer clear of the highly porous red oak. If you're an artist, they'll suggest basswood because it's inexpensive and soft, making it ideal for carving. And if you're looking for maple, they'll tell you that there are two kinds, sugar and red, and if you're going to paint it, they recommend the red stuff. But if you're looking for a paint recommendation, ask Hobson or Batala. Peel can't help you there. Husbands and wives come in and say, "What color do you like?" "Well, I'm colorblind," he says with a chuckle. "It gets me out of a lot." However, Peel is intimately familiar with shades, grains, and feel of the wood that composes his inventory, a collection he's cultivated over the past 30 years. Peel found his passion as an eighth grader in Virginia when his mother enrolled him in a wood shop. He remembers her saying, "Somebody in this house is going to learn how to hang a picture on the wall." In high school, Peel worked at Wicks Lumber in Weldon after his father's job with the power company relocated them to North Carolina. He studied at NC State and worked briefly in agriculture, then got a job at a lumber supplier in Madison. Peel frequented Woodworker Supply and Graham for his personal projects, but there was no lumber shop nearby at that time. In 1996, on his birthday, the hardwood store of North Carolina was incorporated, and about a month later, Peel opened the store in Gibsonville to serve the Triangle. Peel employed his youngest daughter, Helen, just two at the time, to keep him company while he was building the business. "I remember coming in and roaming the halls and raiding the vending machine," Hobson says, though her father eventually put her to work. "Helen was driving a forklift by the time she was 10 years old," Peel says, beaming. "Her salary? $1 a week." A proud father of three girls, he'll happily share a picture of Hobson as a toddler writing up a receipt. her red hair bright like cherry wood, tousled from a hard day's work. I just followed my dad around, Hobson says. Whatever he was doing, I was right there with him. About 8 years later, Peel expanded into the old mill and Hobson got a promotion. The pair spent 2 weeks pressure washing the building. Hobson took out the trash and swept the floors while Peel retrofitted the interior, once reserved for textile manufacturing, into a woodworker's haven. His investment paid off, and soon their wood adorned notable venues across the southeast. The hardwood store crafted custom trim, carved by molder Dan Fogelman, who died this year after 29 years at the store, for Tryon Palace and Mount Vernon. It also supplied lumber for benches at Sarah P. Duke Gardens and for siding at LeBauer Park in Greensboro. Inside his store, Peel's office walls are like a wooden scrapbook. There are hand-carved jewelry boxes, stock cars, and toy trains from the many years that Peel has donated lumber to the Triangle Woodworkers Association, whose members make toys for the Raleigh Toys for Tots program. The sea bass and marlin mounted behind his desk were carved for him by longtime customer William Doc Lindley of Papa Doc's Art and Curry, made with the color-streaked poplar that Peel would set aside for the artist's orders. And there are the frames he's made, filled with pictures of his 3 daughters and 9 grandchildren. Since 2021, Hobson has worked full-time at the store, moving into the second location in Salisbury when it opened in 2024, and has since gotten a raise. Last year, Peel helped her renovate her entire home in Boonville with new cabinets and molding. Her older sister, Batala, joined the team in 2017, and her daughter now drives a forklift at the shop. She's better than some of the guys, Peel says of his 14-year-old granddaughter, a familiar sense of pride in his voice. Sitting at his desk, Peel reflects on his early days of selling lumber. In the 90s and early 2000s, folks would come in with issues of Wood magazine in hand. I knew as soon as one came out, I'd see the project for that month, and the next day, that's what everybody would be asking for, Peel says. On Mondays, the day after the new Yankee Workshop aired on PBS, Peel would answer calls from aspiring craftsmen hoping to replicate whatever host Norm Abram had fashioned that week. Today, the shop is doing better than ever. When TikTok and Pinterest came around, we just took off because everyone decided they were going to get into woodworking, especially during the pandemic, Peel says. These new woodworkers are honoring a long-standing tradition. From our first colonial homes to the craftsmen who put North Carolina's furniture industry on the map, woodworking is hammered into our state's history. The success of the hardwood store proves that passion for a well-crafted home endures. More than half of Peel's clientele are hobbyists, many self-taught. They turn to him to help them build something strong, reliable, and one of a kind. Like a 4-year-old's first big girl bed, made entirely of purple heart by a father who turned to the girl dad with the hardwood shop to make his own daughter's dream come true. And the Hardwood Store of North Carolina, the flagship store, is in Railroad Avenue in Gibsonville. And you can look up their website at simply hardwoodstore.com. That's hardwoodstore.com. Our next article is entitled The Right Tool. A writer's dear friends gave him a maul for splitting wood. When it broke, its sentimental value sent him on a quest to repair it. In Wilkes County, he found just the couple for the job. Among the tools restored by Wicked Iron Resurrections and Rhonda is the author's splitting maul. And there's a picture of that on the picture. Quite frankly, I'm not sure which item it is on the picture, but the picture shows a variety of different woodworking tools in rich colors of browns and blacks. The maul's not fancy. It's a garden variety, big box store maul, straight wooden handle, probably hickory or ash. I exploded that handle last fall, shattering it while I was trying to split some of the bigger stuff my wood guy brings me because he knows I like to split stuff. The mall was gifted to me for the same reason. Our dear friends Nina and John used to come hang out in my writing shed where I have a wood stove, and they would watch me try to split firewood with my dad's old Boy Scout hatchet. They'd laugh at me, more accurately. Then 1 year for my birthday, 10 years ago, maybe more, they gave me the mall. Part gag gift, but only part. They knew I'd love it and knew I'd use it. And I did, every winter, and sometimes in the summer too, accounting for storms and deadfall, and the occasional round or three I'd take from a neighbor who'd leave a cut tree at the curb. High sentimental value, in other words. Those writing shed nights were magical. We met John and Nina because their kids were one clothes cycle older than ours, and they once left a bag of the shirts and pants their kids outgrew on our porch. We invited them over for drinks to thank them, and I don't think it's inaccurate to say we fell in love. My wife and I even joked after the first time they left. Is it too soon to text them to see if they want to get together again? It was not. They did, and we all did, often in the writing shed, stove blazing, and the double doors cracked to let the cool night air in, and music on the hi-fi, martinis, and the same sampler pack of cookies every time. In the corner, dueling baby monitors so we could hear if ours were asleep in the house, and they could see if theirs were asleep a block away. We were hiding from being who we were, from our houses, from our small children, from everyone in the world who was not us. We vacationed together. We ate dinner together 2 or 3 times a month. We hung out on porches. Nina and Tita, my wife, became closer than sisters. And then Nina got sick. There's so much more and then here. But the quickest version that she finally did not get better. She died of cancer at 39 years old, the mother of 2 boys barely older than ours. She was a comet. She was kind. She was wickedly, impossibly smart and funny. She liked to get the neighborhood together to sing Springsteen songs. She liked to sit in my writing shed and get a little tipsy and dance with John while Tita and I danced across the room. We loved them. We love them both still. I assumed repairing the mall would be simple. Go to the big box, buy a handle, spend an afternoon undoing and redoing. None of the replacement handles I could find would fit the mall. It was immediately clear I didn't know what I was doing. Nina, by the way, would have loved this. I'm not sure why I didn't call either of my 2 local hardware stores. Maybe I understood that it needed to be a quest, that though Nina's been gone 8 years, this would be a means to grieve in a way I hadn't yet and possibly needed to. And while I'm not a big ghost guy, I do believe in a hazy way in the presence of people we lose, in much the same way that I believe stories exist on a plane that's also off the page. So it's not a stretch to say that she was with me in some way as I hit dead end after dead end, and with me too when I found the Facebook listing for a gorgeous vintage Craftsman axe, red painted accents and highly polished steel, beautiful handle. Yes. Wicked Iron Resurrections messaged back they were, in fact, in the business of axe restoration, and yes, they could rehang my mall. Nina would have loved that Warren Linehan and Courtney Ridings were bonded such that he struggles to sell any of the axes that Ridings has helped restore. She would have loved that they live in a 140-year-old house in Rhonda near Elkin, and that the back bedroom is so full of axes and tomahawks and hatchets that one's first thought is of a museum. She would have loved that Linehan's knowledge of axe and tomahawk history stretches well past the encyclopedic. She would have loved Ridings shrugging when she said, "I just like to make ugly things pretty and make things sharp. If I'm mad, I like to tear things up." Nina would have loved, too, the pair's passion for the act of restoration itself, for finding old tools and putting them back to use. Ridings is more on the restoration of axe heads. Linehan makes the handles. Mine, he says, will be hickory sourced not much more than 10 miles from his house, from a guy he's got down in the Roaring River. It will be made, I'm sure, when I hear him say, in something called coffin octagonal style, and Nina would have delighted in that dark joke. Would I like the new handle to be painted red to match the red vinyl sheath of the original? I've known since I found Wicked Iron. I'm leaving this one to the universe. Whatever handle comes back is the one that needs to come back. I tell Linehan and Ridings that I trust literally any choice they'd like to make. Okay, they say. We'll let you know when it's ready. I picked up the finished mall at an exit near Kernersville. Linehan had been so kind as to bring it most of the way to me. There it is in the back seat of his truck, and it's so much more than I'd hoped. It's stunning. It's a work of art. It smells like oil and metal and wood. I cry a little in the parking lot and cry off and on driving home. Springsteen on the radio. Nina, I think. I did something a little wild. I asked for a miracle, and I got it. The handle is shag bark hickory, Linehan tells me. The bottom is painted red. A red painted handle is historically used to identify tools. The gunmetal accent stripe is just an accent. The bit is polished and sharpened and in far better shape than it ever was before. The eye gave him a bit of trouble, but he worked around it and everything's solid. The handle is just octagonal style, not coffin. Coffin is a term from the late 1800s, not much in use anymore. I'm going to keep thinking of it that way, though, I decide. John moved to Boston a couple of years ago, but he comes back through Greensboro from time to time. By the next time I see him, I'll have been brave enough to start using the restored mall, and we'll sit by the fire pit or the wood stove in the shed. We'll put some music on, watch the fire, and remember Nina, who would have loved the idea of finding two people in Wilkes County to restore a mall that I could have far more easily replaced. This was not the sort of thing to be done easily. She would have known. This is the sort of thing that to be done right. I just never dreamed of how right it could be. This last article is entitled Out of the Woodwork, and it's about nine North Carolina craftspeople who transform pieces of wood into magnificent works of art, from a carved bluebird perched on a dogwood branch to delicate pair of earrings shaped out of a fallen oak. And I'll just, these are little vignettes, very quick. This is Joe Carr out of Durham. Composition books are scattered around the Durham home of woodworker and clockmaker Joe Carr. When he gets the idea for a clock or a piece of furniture, he picks up the nearest one and sketches it. He's been a woodworker and a furniture maker for about 45 years, but he began making wooden timepieces about a decade ago after picking up a magazine on perpetual calendars and skeleton clocks, those with exposed gears, in an airport lounge. An electrical engineer by trade, he started thinking about how to design one right away. After he built one, he realized he wanted to see the gears move. So he designed a counter-rotating movement in which the hands rotate opposite to the numbers, a design he has since patented. Carr works with clients to get a feel for their space and their preferred style and colors. He then programs a computer-controlled router, or CNC machine, to cut the gears and designs out of a range of hardwoods. He retired from engineering about 5 years ago, which allows him to focus on building ever more creative furniture and clocks through his business, J.N. Carr Woodworks. Now he's got nothing but time. Well, that sound means that we've run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Martha Potter, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired and is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. For any questions or comments, please give us a call at 919-832-5138. And so long until next time.